Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As the smoke clears from the blow of the Great Recession, there's a new gender picture before us. Women, says my guest today, Hannah Rosen, are taking a new lead role. In the workforce, in management, in higher education, men are falling behind. It can look like a profound gender sea change. Is it? This hour on Point, Hannah Rosen calls it the end of men. You can join the conversation. Can you see it in your own career, your workplace, your family? Are women becoming not just equal, but the alpha gender? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear in a few minutes from writer and social observer Thomas Edsel, who has his doubts about a role reversal. But right now, from Washington, Hannah Rosen joins us. She wrote the cover story for the new issue of The Atlantic. The big headline is The End of Men, How Women Are Taking Control of Everything. Hannah Rosen, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi, great to have you. You do not put too fine a point on it. If I may quote just a sentence here, you say, man has been the dominant sex since, well, the dawn of mankind. But for the first time in human history, that is changing, and with shocking speed, you write. What's the evidence, Hannah?
The evidence is if you start to look at statistics from, say, sex preference numbers, gender preference, that is, and people choosing boys or girls, to college, that's one of the most stark one, how many more women are getting BAs, to how many women are going to professional school, to even marriage numbers. If you start to put these dots together, and also the jobs that are growing in this future economy, you see that women are doing shockingly well. And I think it surprised me, too. I mean, it's very hard to get your head around the fact that that might be true, because for so long, we just don't think that way. But there does seem to be something profound happening in the culture.
Your bottom line is so head-turning that we'd better hear some of these numbers to figure out if we connect the dots the same way you do. Take us right through from, I mean, pre-birth, the couples choosing girls or choosing boys right on up through college and management and all the rest. What are the numbers that bring you to this a big conclusion?
All right, so let's start with the babies. There are been sort of mass surveys about, you know, do you prefer girls, do you prefer boys generally, sort of theoretically. And then there's something else, which is when people go into fertility clinics, what do they actually choose? And I started with a scientist named Ronald Erickson, who invented a sperm spinning technology and in the late 70s and 80s. And at the time, he was roundly attacked by feminists who thought that he was going to create you turn us into India and China, basically.
Because everybody would choose boys.
Because everybody would choose boys.
And he was kind of a cowboy biologist himself.
Yeah, he's a fantastic character, and he is a cowboy. He grew up on a ranch, and he was also this sort of cowboy geneticist. And so, you know, he just sort of went head-to-head with the feminists. And then as he started to look in the numbers, he realized that, in fact, the opposite was happening, was what he realized later.
I mean, American couples who need his help to have a baby or need that kind of science are choosing to have girls rather than boys?
Are choosing to have girls, right. And then I checked in with the more updated technology, the Microsort technology, which is now seeking FDA approval, so it's not widely used. But there, too, you have 75% of couples choosing girls. So it just makes you think. I mean, this does not say that widely all over the U.S., you know, everybody wants to have girls. But it really is so different from what you expect that you really have to sit and think hard about it. So that's the
birth statistics. Okay, there's a data point. Yeah.
Okay, another data point. Let's look at the jobs growing in the economy. If you take the list of the top 15 jobs projected to grow in the next 10 years, all but two of them are jobs that are traditionally dominated by women. And these are jobs like childcare and elder care and food preparation. And so then you think, what broadly is happening in the economy? This is what's broadly happening. As more women, upper-class women, are entering the workforce, they're creating jobs for women in the middle and lower class who are doing the things that they used to do, namely childcare, elder care, food preparation, the things that they used to do for free at home, let's say. So you have an economy in which the men have been devastated in the last recession.
Lost way more jobs than women.
Yeah, we lost way more jobs than women.
Because it was construction and all that.
Right,
and
housing
finance.
Boom. Exactly. The housing boom. And these were industries that were heavily dominated by men. Mm-hmm. So men really took a blow. And then sort of the growth is happening in women's jobs. And then you take the kind of middle class, sort of, you know, the rising middle class. People are going to colleges. We all think of college as a sort of requisite for succeeding in America. Mm-hmm. And there you see that women are getting 60% of the degrees and starting to dominate professional schools like law schools and medical schools. And you have to think to yourself, what's going on there? It's not like women have bred a super race suddenly and are smarter than men. There's just something about what school these days demands and the economy these days demands, which women seem to be more successful at. And again, it's not because they're smarter. It's something, you know, people have all different theories. Is this about habits? Is this about discipline? And you don't like to really go down this road because you create these really bad gender stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And they used to be really bad, like, oh, women will exert a moral force upon our business mm-hmm. culture and mm-hmm. make us really moral. You know, that stuff we all understand to be not that true. But there is some reason, and I don't think people have quite put their finger on it, why women are, say, more successful in school. And you've had 10 years of people writing about what they call the boy crisis with nobody really listening, which is this idea that boys are having trouble from elementary school on up in a way that they never have before. And in other countries, this phenomenon is well recognized, and they have, dirty word, affirmative action for boys, where they actually try and create special programs, all boys schools. You know, they try and bring reading material into the schools to kind of give boys a leg up, because they realize that for whatever reason, boys are having trouble in school these days.
And you say elite schools in this country are now having a sort of quiet affirmative action programs to keep a balance between male and female students themselves. Take us on beyond college. We'll come and look at this whole notion of a culture changing, the times changing in a way that may advantage women over men. But when you get to the workforce, you say that is now majority female, that the ranks of managers in the United States are now majority female. Is that true?
It is true. And no, I lied. No, it is true.
I mean, it doesn't fit our perception even now.
It's true. It's true. It's true. And if you know, for one thing, let's just stop at the number that the American workforce is now majority female. That is remarkable. I mean, you've gone through a century in which women didn't work at all. And then you've gone, you know, a little more slowly. You know, women could be secretaries, let's say. That's the Mad Men era. And then, you know, women could enter the first ranks of working culture, but they basically had to quit when they got married or had children. You know, now we're not that many years later, and mm-hmm. women are the majority of the workforce. You know, they work when they have small children. And part of the story is that women have made so many changes, whereas I think men have been relatively static in terms of what roles are considered acceptable
right.
for traditional
So women
manhood.
Have adapted more, but managers, a majority of managers? What? Really?
Yes, yes.
I mean, I'm sorry.
I mean, if you
great,
did.
Fine, but
look,
where?
If you dig more deeply, there's a wonderful book called Through the Labyrinth by a woman named Alice Eagly, and she actually breaks down these numbers in terms of what kinds of managers do women tend to be and what mm-hmm. kinds of managers do men tend to be. And the higher up the scale, the more complicated my argument gets, because there is no way that I can make the claim, say, once you reach the CEO level, mm-hmm. there are barely any female CEOs. Once we reach the top power levels, that's true in American politics. And so my argument is essentially that the culture from the working to middle class on up is sort of shoving the upper classes and sort of screaming and saying you can't have the situation where women are, say, you know, the majority of managers and the majority, you know, first class legal mm-hmm. associates. And then suddenly at the top, it all dwindles away. And why is that? Because unless we recognize that women are dominating the workforce, we are not going to deal with questions like childcare and maternity leave and sort of restructure ourselves in
right.
order to acknowledge this new reality. So you have this really unstable situation, which seems to me just unsustainable.
Well, we'll look at all that, but I can imagine people listening to this and saying, okay, so women are getting the degrees of the majority of the workforce. They got a lot of management jobs, but not top management. Only 3%, as you point out, of Fortune 500 CEOs are women. You're making the case that the kind of women are the large and in charge of gender now. But could you look at this and say, you know, the guys are still in charge. They're still at the top of the heap. They just put women to work for them.
Exactly. The guys are still in charge at the top levels, but it just feels unsustainable. For one thing, if you look at a broad cultural change, you can just stop my argument there without looking at the upper classes. You can just say in marriages, in the way that, you know, many of the college women that I interview, their expectations for what their husbands will do and how they will make a lot of money and their husbands will stay home. The way men and women think about each other broadly in the culture is changing very radically. That in and of itself is a lot. That is a huge change from what was true even when I was in college. And then the upper classes, like I said, you know, there's just pressure up there. When you had a patriarchy across the board, when you had men in charge across the board in marriages in every class, then it all kind of made sense. But now it doesn't really make sense anymore. It just feels unsustainable. So I could never make the argument that women rule. I can only make the argument that things have changed and it's time to look at how things have changed, and the current situation feels like an anachronism.
Well,
it doesn't
I don't know.
Feel stable.
But when I read your article, starting with the headline, The End of Men, but it sounds to me like you're saying women rule, or women are poised to rule. I mean,
yes.
You've got to go back I don't know what, Mohenjo-Daro or somewhere where you've got female deities, you know. I mean, are you saying that it's turning, that really we've got a gender role reversal? It's going to be women who kind of are the alpha gender, the boss.
I guess I am saying that, yes. But I guess where we would separate that is by saying, you know, that might be true in the culture and marriage, and you take the working class, which is the source of many of our ideas about masculinity, and there it seems to be becoming a matriarchy. So our ideas about gender are changing. It's not the same as saying women rule and hold all the money and all the power right now, because they don't. I mean, we can look and see that they don't. But whether they will, you know, I think they are starting to kind of move, push and put more and more pressure on the upper classes. One of the things that I go into is how people are starting to construct the American workplace. And it's been for so long a workplace that gives great advantages to people who are not taking care of the children. And more you have a younger generation, which is, you know, flexibility, how one constructs one's relationship to the workplace for the last 15 years has been thought of entirely as an issue about moms, you know, like the mommy track or not the mommy track, you know, as this was brought up 15 years ago. Whereas now we have these more generic terms of workplace flexibility, which I think apply to everyone and not just women.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women rising in the economy, the culture, and asking whether the long age of men in charge is ending. Hannah Rosen joins us. She's written the cover story for The Atlantic, The End of Men, and we've got lots of questions off of it. She makes a big, strong case, and there are a lot of facts and figures to really make you wonder here what's going on. Hannah Rosen joins us from Washington. Thomas Edsel joins us there as well. He's politics editor for Huffington Post, professor of journalism at Columbia University. He's been researching and writing about gender disparities for many years. He's author of Building Red America, Chain Reaction, The New Politics of Inequality. Thomas Edsel, thanks very much for being with us. Welcome back to On Point.
It's good to be here with you, Tom.
Let me quote for you the cowboy biologist that Hannah leads off with. This is Ronald Erickson. And he may be joking around the Cracker Barrel, or he may not here, but he says, women live longer than men, they do better in the economy, more of them graduate from college, they go into space, do everything men do. Sometimes they do it a whole lot better. I mean, hell, get out of the way, she quotes him, saying, these females are going to leave us males in the dust. Are they doing that, Tom?
I think Hannah's piece is a very good piece, but it only tells part of the story. What's taking place in this country is that there's been a democratization of the workplace, the market, and the effect of that has been that women have much more opportunity. They can move up, and they are moving up. It's more sort of the great sorting rather than the end of men. And women are moving up in specific fields where they do much better than men, and they're not moving up so much in other fields where they don't do as well as men. Men still are the CEOs, they are the scientists in the main with hard science. They are the inventors. They are the people who dominate cutting-edge industries like high-tech and finance. That's not to say, though, that it's correct. Women all through the middle range of jobs are moving up very fast and are equal or the majority in many cases. Hannah's piece raises but does not really address sort of a fundamental question. Are these phenomena that are taking place in the workplace and at home the result of biological differences between men and women, or are they socially constructed differences? She says she does not want to get into stereotype issues, but they are that's a fundamental question. If you're going to, she wants to address these issues and find a way to try to resolve the traumas that these changes are taking place. If you don't know what the cause is, you're going to have a hard time addressing what the what to do about these questions.
Well, let's get Hannah right in the middle of this. After all, as she has it, women are in charge, Hannah, so we want you out front. What about it? If you're saying there's a culture change, there's an economic change that may favor strengths of women, are you then going for the, you know, social behavioral construction stereotyping path, or do you really see something in the culture that somehow disadvantages men, even boys now, and says this is the age for women to rule?
There's a great literature about the psychological differences between men and women and the biological differences between men and women. And I think, obviously, it concludes that there's a little bit of both. When Tom says democratization, that's a very interesting way to put it. It put me immediately in mind of a place like South Korea, which I write about in the story, which has had for a long time this kind of artificial hold on women. It's one of the
Talk about male-dominated.
Yeah, it's one of the most patriarchal societies that was ever constructed. And when they started to industrialize, things loosened up. I mean, it's, you know, became much more democratized than it ever has been in keeping with its industrialization, its rapid industrialization. And suddenly things didn't make any sense. And women who had been previously forced to, say, join their husbands' families and could not get the children after a divorce, could not give the children their names, could not take care of their own parents, had to take care of their husband's parents, were suddenly free when they moved to the cities to do all of these things. Now, is this because they were smarter and better or whatever? It's just because there was this sort of artificial hold and things weren't really making sense. And so, you know, are they biologically more suited to be nurturers? I'm not sure. That's just
but
what
globally,
women have done
you could
for
say,
a very long time.
Right. Globally, you could say there's been, thousands of years then of this so-called artificial hold. But what I read you saying is that, at least in this country, that hold may be over, that women are getting the grip now.
Right. And, you know, and the other thing I want to point out is that a lot of these changes aren't necessarily great for women, the fact that they're filling all these roles. I mean, they do seem to be more flexible. You know what? Let's stick to schools for a minute, because that's a good place to have this discussion. Why are women doing better in college? What is it about women? Is there something that's changed about college and what college demands? We know that women and men are not smarter than each other. There are differences in the extremes, like Tom said. You know, men tend to excel at the extremes of the hard sciences. That is true. That is very hard to get around.
The cutting edge. Does that mean they're still the cultural, boss guys or not?
Not necessarily. It just means that sort of intellectually, you tend to find sort of male genius hard science people more than you find female genius hard science people, even though women are making many inroads into the hard sciences. But just to stay at the sort of
Larry Summers said that and got run out of Harvard on a rail, more or less.
Well, he didn't exactly say that. And if you asked him now, he would talk about the extreme. I mean, he would talk about the means and the extremes, and he would get himself in trouble all over again. But but let's set that one aside and just take the sort of average school, you know?
Okay.
We know that women are not smarter than men, and we know that men are not smarter than women. I'm taking the mean. Women and men test equally smart. They test in many ways equally aggressive. So then you have to dig. They do. Tom is shaking his head because he's in the studio here with me. They test aggressive in different ways.
Yes,
women and men
true.
Test aggressive in different ways. How's that, Tom?
Okay.
So it is not rankly true the way we've always assumed that men are aggressive and they push to make decisions. They're much more risk-taking. There are differences in the ways that they're aggressive. Our model of great management is moving towards a feminine model, particularly after the last real estate crash, right? We no longer think it's great. Risk-taking.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. The market crash, not just the real estate, but risk-taking overall. And this is just a matter of perception, not necessarily biology. We now perceive excessive risk-taking and aggression to be not as good as before. And so, therefore, ideal management kind of models change to include more of sort of inclusive decision making. And in when you read the texts of how they teach management now in business school, it sounds an awful lot like gender theory and feminization of the management model. And so is that something inherent? Like, are men not able to be that if they're taught that in business school? I don't think so. I think these are more about social roles than what we are biologically predetermined to do.
Hannah Rosen, Thomas.
Well, how could, let me ask a question. Yes. How could women have adjusted so quickly to this new opened up world, whereas men seem to be stalling? Aren't there really substantial differences in the values and outlook of men and women that they, in terms of what they are, the cooperation? You write, for example, the attributes most valuable today, social intelligence, open communication, and ability to sit still and focus, suggesting that those are more female characteristics mm-hmm. than male characteristics. Are those characteristics inbred? I mean, why can't men just adjust? And
I think they might be able to. I mean, I think partly these are social roles. We have long, you know, the women have been socialized to be one way or another. I mean, the most interesting stories you read about gender relations these days that pop up every once in a while in the news have to do with men and children, right? How men are taking care of the children, the Swedish model of children, whether men can stay home, what is the stay-at-home dads. You know, while this is probably a minor phenomenon in America, why it's interesting is that it gets at the idea that these things are not predetermined, you know, that we have led ourselves to believe that biologically there's some reason why the world has to be constructed this way, when maybe it's just a question of social roles. It used to be more efficient for women to do one thing and men to do another thing.
Well, Thomas Edsel, maybe it's that men are voluntarily checking out. You know, maybe they don't want the kind of roles that women are stepping into in a changed culture, a changed economy.
I mean, you know, community colleges, like, I'm being too aggressive here.
No, but it's a different kind of aggression.
It's very hard to deal
very
with Hannah. She's
kind.
Very tough, having known her for quite a while.
I'm going to reach over the table. And
Tom, let me help you then. What do you say?
Please.
Affirmative action for Tom.
No, but seriously, maybe men are opting out. Maybe they're saying, hey, you take it. We don't like this new culture or environment and era. We don't want to be out front. This isn't our thing. This isn't chainsaws and hammers and, you know, factory. We're
actually, I think what you're getting at is where things really do start getting interesting. And I think the sharp rise in working class male support for the Republican Party, for example, is a form of opting out, like you're describing, or a form of reaction.
What do you mean?
That the Democratic Party has been on the leading edge of women's rights. It's been a Hillary care, all of the advances, if you look at the voting on ERA, all these different issues have been Democratic initiatives and they're in the Democratic Party platform.
But Democrats didn't send the auto industry to Japan or, you know, the rest
of the factories. No, I'm just adding, though, if you have to make a political choice in this context, I'm not saying that it's the actual outcome, but I'm just saying for a white working class guy, he says, who's on my side? And he does not see the Democratic Party particularly on his side. That you'll find that evidence in focus groups and polls and in the actual votes. Their abandonment of the Democratic Party has been massive.
But keep it gender-wise. Are they also saying, look, madam, it's all yours. Here are the keys. I'm out of here.
I think you do see that in the very poor people. I mean, but that's a real abandonment, and it's much more complex. There, I think there is a real departure of manhood, fatherhood, all kinds of male roles that are being undermined. I'm not sure that that's true in the middle and upper class.
I want to begin to get our listeners in. Lots of callers here. Stamford, Connecticut. Ed, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What do you see?
I am a stay-at-home dad. And my wife is the sole breadwinner of the family. And our decision was, our son was born with a high-functioning autism, mm-hmm. and the daycare and the nanny wasn't working, so I stay at home full-time.
So is this a personal decision, Ed, or do you see it as the end of civilization as we've known it?
Oh, no, it's a personal decision.
But what about the thesis, Hannah's headline, The End of Men?
Well, men can adapt, so can women, so things will change, but for the most part, I think men will still be the provider.
When your wife then comes home from work, and bless you for doing that work that you're doing right there, but when she comes home from the job, does she say, hey, you know what, Ed, it's a new day out there. Women rule? Or does she come home and complain about the male bosses?
Neither. Well, intellectually she's fine with it, but at a core of her personality, I think it doesn't sit right with her. Because every time she says, I'm a stay-at-home dad, she says it's temporarily. One day he will go back to work.
Right. So she's still got a different model in mind. Ed, I appreciate your call and that kind of frontline testimony. And let me get one more call right here, and we'll look at Ed's story as well. Coletta's calling from East Lansing, Michigan. Coletta, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thank you for letting me be on the program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a professor at Michigan State University, and I have a PhD in economics and labor economics from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been teaching a course called Women in Work, Issues and Policy Analysis for 37 years.
So you know your stuff. What have you got, Colette?
Well, some of the facts that Ms. Rosen are giving is simply not true. First of all, women do not represent over 50% of the labor force. They represent 47%. And they have a labor force participation rate of 60% and men have it of 73%. There is this misnomer that's often used in the press by people who don't understand the exact calculation of these statistics. But I will agree that obviously they have increased their participation greatly. But this has actually been going on since about the 1960s or so. And it's just that people are increasingly seeing this. However, there are problems that women face in the labor force, such as the wage gap, where women only earn about 77% of what men earn.
Mm-hmm.
And the job segregation still exists to a great extent. We talk about women in all these different occupations and so on,
mm-hmm.
and that's true. They are moving into other occupations, but the bulk of women are still in what we call administrative support. Over 25% of women who work in that's our new term for clerical
mm-hmm.
service positions, not high-level service positions, but waitressing, beauticians, and that sort of thing. Okay. So these things are still there, and Ms. Rosen talked about the increase in, we might say, outsourcing of things such as child care
mm-hmm.
and elder care and so on. That's true for some, but actually what's happening is a lot of women are becoming a part of the sandwich generation where they're taking care of their parents or husbands even. And at the same time, they're taking care of older kids.
Coletta, if I may, we know that picture, and that's a lot of work. But I'm really interested by, you've been doing this for 30 years, you know your stuff, but that also means I'm assuming that there's a kind of generation gap between you and Hannah. And you look at this, and I'm hearing a kind of glass half full or half empty, and she's seeing the half full even an in charge interpretation. I mean, well, Hannah, if you'd like to respond, first there's the question of statistics, and then 47 versus majority sounds like a significant statistical difference, and then the question of whether, you know, this is a long struggle since the 60s, or in many ways women have won. Coletta's skeptical.
You know, women have won is the. Let me address the larger question first. Women have won is almost the wrong way to put it because I don't actually think these two views are incompatible. I did not argue that women are happy and in charge. I just argued that in many ways women hold all the cards. So the situation in which women are squeezed, that, mm-hmm. such as the community college that I visited, is not a good situation for anyone.
Doing it all.
This is a situation mm-hmm. in which 40% of American children are born to single-parent households. And why is that? It's because, as this woman, Catherine Eden, a sociologist at Harvard, writes, you know, women have set the bar pretty high. They don't want to marry a deadbeat dad. They don't want to get married just for the sake of getting married. So they live these pretty, you know, rough lives where they're working, taking care of the kids, going to school, earning the money.
Because they see men is not up to it anymore.
Exactly, and they don't marry them. And so that's not great, but it's a fact.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women rising in the economy and the culture and asking whether the long age of men in charge is ending. Hannah Rosen wrote the cover story for The Atlantic headline, The End of Men, How Women Are Taking Control of Everything. She joins us from Washington, as does Thomas Edsel, author of Building Red America, Chain Reaction, The New Politics of Inequality. He's not so sure. Let's get a call from Salt Lake City, Utah. Michael, you're on the air, Michael.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
A quick comment, if I may. I think we're headed for an equilibrium, almost an equilibrium. Mm-hmm. Before agriculture, women in agriculture, you have to fight over land, you have to work the land. That's men's domain. And through the centuries, we set up roadblocks for women to get power, even if they could break out of that mold. Also, you have infant mortality. Women had to kick out a lot more babies. It was a physical toll.
Yep.
Not much they could do about that. Industrialization, fast forward, here we are. Women have almost torn down all the religious and cultural constructs that held them down. And so I think we're going to head back to that equilibrium of hunter-gatherer times, except for there's going to be a slight statistical skew against the women just because the physical toll of giving birth, even if we are having less children, is going to knock a few women out of the pipeline.
But what does it mean then, do you think, Michael, that we're not seeing that statistical skew right now? For example, in college graduations, nobody argues that number. Women way ahead of young men.
Sure, and I think it's just the pendulum sort of swinging the other way, men getting used to their new role, women getting used to their new role and thriving, and I think it's just going to equal out, and we'll head back to that equilibrium once men get their feet under them in this new lifestyle.
That's heading a long way back to hunter-gatherer times for the equilibrium you see there, but that's good analysis, Michael. I appreciate it. Hannah, how about it? I mean, does somebody have to, like, you know, be in that driver's seat, have the wheel, or what about an equilibrium? Is that sort of gender, real gender equality? Is that where we're headed?
Yes, that's not a bad way to put it. I mean, it's not that one gender has to rule over the other gender. It's just that at this moment, women seem to have a lot of advantages. But if ultimately we're to end up where people, you know, there are many utopians based on this idea that women and men raise children equally and, you know, work equally, and that would be great. I mean, I liked that caller's snapshot history of America, except the part where he went back to the hunter-gatherer society.
What about it?
I wouldn't have looped back to that. But
you don't see equilibrium back there?
No, because that was an era in which it was actually mattered how physically strong you were, and men are physically stronger than women for the most part. And so if you set up a society where physical strength matters, then, you know, men rule invariably. And so it's not we've passed that point, but the rest of his history was pretty convincing.
Someplace I saw a cartoon recently that was an old cave wall painting. It showed a woman, you know, in those sort of stick figures they used in the cave paintings, and she's chasing, I don't know, a mastodon or whatever, and with her spear and carrying three kids on her back. Who knows how it went? But Thomas Edsel, you know,
let me throw in a thought here.
Yeah.
I think there may be kind of a equalization and a something of a parity, but the difference is that I think that there are significant differences between men and women in their attitudes, in their views, and in their willingness to work 80-hour weeks, in their whether they like to work alone or whether they like to work with other people. There are studies that show substantial differences, and what you're going to see now is, in the economy, those strengths, people with strengths that actually fit different kinds of jobs,
but Hannah says overall
jobs.
that now in this economy, that favors women. Yes, there are differences.
I think that it favors the majority of women, mm-hmm, throughout the whole middle. I think there's going to be significant problems at the very top, because one of the things that women, and this may well be a virtue, women are not so inclined as men to put in 80 hours, to abandon the family, and just say, my getting ahead at work counts. Those are the kind of people who get to the top in politics, in science, and in corporate America. And the percentage of women who are CEOs, despite all this democratization that has taken place, has stayed flat now for quite a while at about 5%, has been about the highest.
3%.
The same
of
with the
Fortune
17%. 17% in Congress are women. These are jobs that take huge devotion. If you're a member of Congress, you've got to go fly to Congress, be there for 3 or 4 days every week during the session, leave the family or bring the family.
Right. It's
very
tough.
Hectic, very, very hard work. And it's perfectly legitimate to say, that's something I don't want to spend my life doing. And I think more women than men make that choice.
Hannah, I want to put a web comment to you, if I may. This is from a Lynn. She says, I've been married for 29 years to a man of great integrity and character. I've come to see over and over again that men do not get nearly enough credit for their contributions to the family and hard work in society. She writes, I'm so tired of men being reduced to beer-drinking, gas-passing, ne'er-do-well Neanderthals. Yes, women are stereotyped left and right, but the beating men have taken over the last 30 years is no less insidious and odious. Oh, Hannah, are you beating up the men some more?
Ask my husband and my two sons if I'm beating them up. No, I think that, I don't think that's true anymore. I think the image of men is actually changing quite a lot, and people don't talk about men that way unless they are that way. Like, there's a VH1 show called Dad Camp, which is about deadbeat dads, and I think, you know, if you see the dads in that show who really don't really think, I mean, and they represent a sort of growing segment in society who feels absolutely no responsibility to taking care of children that they are the fathers of. And so in some ways, that the camp that deserves such stereotyping has grown, and in other ways, and this is a big class divide, there's a huge responsibility on men such as my husband to, you know, do their share of the childcare. I think we kind of expect that now. And so, you know, it's actually very, it would be very difficult for my husband to get away with being a kind of Neanderthal, gas passing, et cetera.
But you write about how American pop culture now has these endless variations on the, not the alpha male, but the omega male, the kind of, you know, ranks even below any in the wolf pack, this often unemployed, romantically challenged loser, you know, the sort of a Judd Apatow, 40-year-old virgin, or, you know, a Greenberg character.
I mean, yeah, these guys are not...
It's not Gary Cooper anymore.
No, but these guys are not Neanderthals. They're just kind of stuck. They're stuck. They don't know which way to go. They don't know what to do with themselves. I mean, they're sort of 40-year-old men behaving the way, you know, 21-year-old men often behave or have behaved. Sort of, where do I go? What do I do with myself? I don't have a job. I'm not married. I don't have any children. If I have children, I don't take care of my children. I mean, that's a trope that comes up over and over again in pop culture, of a certain kind of guy, not a super manly man, just a kind of stuck. In fact, Judd Apatow's characters are anything but manly men.
Let's go to Jack in Waltham, Massachusetts. Jack, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. One thing that's interesting to me, since you raised politics, that the real aggressive, tough politicians with fortitude, at least currently now in the Republican Party, are women, with Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, Nikki Haley in South Carolina. Frankly, I wanted to comment on the fact that those seem like they're the politicians with real cojones, if I can use that term, as Sarah Palin and the Michelle Bachmann types. And the Republican males seem like wimps.
What do you make of that? The sort of Annie Oakley's on steroids here, Hannah.
I actually want to hear Tom on this question because I'm really curious what he thinks. But I will say this gets back to our question of how we perceive men and women and whether things are innate. The more women do take on power, and these are conservative women who you know, promote traditional family values, the more our perceptions of what women are and how they behave change, so that these women are pretty tough. You know, you have Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina are behaving just like men in politics, throwing all their money into the race, you know, the way they talk, how they campaign, Nikki Haley. I mean, we have this sort of crop of strong, tough conservative women types in the Republican Party. It kind of changes our notions of how women in politics behave. But Tom, going back to your question, Tom Edsel, that is your question about, you know, working class men in the Republican Party. I am really curious how you see this new crop of women,
these,
all of whom are
hinder kicking women. They may not have the numbers, but they've really got a lot of edge right now, Thomas Edsel. What do you make of that?
I think that it actually goes to the point of stereotyping, that it's very dangerous to stereotype. And I think what's interesting is that that there may be things about the character of Republicans versus the character of Democrats that women in the Republican Party, especially very active and effective ones, may have more what would be described as male characteristics, because they are not stereotypical. You have many men who have feminine characteristics and many women who have more male characteristics. That the women in the Republican Party may be more less risk adverse, for example, more aggressive, have the characteristics that you tend to associate with men.
So it seems like a change, though. I mean, Elizabeth Dole was not exactly a Michelle Bachmann character. You know, you had other kinds of Republicans. Let's get a view from out in the country, Pocatello, Idaho. Ann, you're on the air. What do you see, Ann?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I was wondering if there is an issue at all in terms of viewing this geographically. Seems like where I am in a rural and conservative part of the country that there's still very traditional roles for women and men. And I was just wondering if there's a significant difference between the rural and the urban communities in our country. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Anne. Hannah, are you describing a coastal phenom or Anne in Pocatello Wonders?
No, I'm not describing a coastal phenom. The two ways that they manifest themselves are different, but they're not. But the outcome is not different. I intentionally did my reporting in Kansas City because I wanted to pick a place with a sort of industrial past that was pretty working class, and so it was there that I talked to the college girls, where it would be perfectly okay in that atmosphere for them to say, "I'm staying home to raise my kids. My husband's going to work and make all the money." And they said very much the opposite of that, which was, you know, assuming that their husbands were going to be Judd Apatow types and that they would be making all the money while their husbands stayed home to take care of the kids. I mean, I think that, in fact, in the working class, this is a stronger phenomenon than it is in the coastal sort of elites.
Mm. Anne, thanks for your call from Pocatello. Manchester, New Hampshire. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for the chance to speak on this important topic. I remember I grew up in the 60s, early 70s, graduated from high school in the 80s. So that's where, you know, what was going on in the country at that time was the whole women's lib movement. And it's really continued on to today. You have all kinds of groups at the younger ages that really focus on girl power. Now, I think those are good things, but I think it marginalizes boys, and it continues right through adulthood. There are all kinds of programs, not just for girls, but for women that focus on their gender and support them because of their gender.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like that for men. Your guest said that she doesn't want to stereotype men, but I keep hearing this, the Judd Apatow type. And then she goes on to say that men, their image is actually improving, but then she goes on to put out all those negative stereotypes. I'll tell you what, I do all the cooking in my house, I do all the shopping, I take care of my daughter, I just dropped her off at a pool party for her end of the school year. Women are supported, men are not. I think that women should be supported, but not at the cost of marginalizing boys and men.
Kevin, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Hannah, time for support groups for men?
They have them in other countries. I don't know why we don't have them. And they're starting to have them in this country as well. They even have, you know, like I said, all boys classes, sort of lots of affirmative action for boys in schools. I don't see why that's so anathema here.
Thomas Edsel, do you think we need a kind of, you know, a men's improvement society in this country or not?
I tend to be against this kind of activity. I think it plays up too much the notion of victimhood, no matter which the sex is. And adapting to the world as it is a more important function, and that will happen better, perhaps, if people do not think of themselves as beleaguered and under siege by an unfair system, which those kind of programs encourage.
But if you're out of work and taking care of the kids and getting all the groceries and, you know, can't sort of do what you pictured yourself doing, you may be in the mood for something. Dustin in Burlington, Vermont. Dustin, you're on the air.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So, I've known a lot of people, a lot of, guy friends of mine who have been just kind of generally dissatisfied with life, even if they were performing well in their careers, and it's just because they would rather be at home with their kids. And, I welcome this whole shift, to women being more dominant in the workforce. That kind of takes some pressure off us guys to perform in that arena.
Women can have it, you say, Dustin?
Oh, yeah, kind of. I've been a career guy so far, but, just from the nieces and nephews, you know, younger kids in my family, I've always enjoyed spending time with them, and it kind of helps that I'm married to a girl who's very career-oriented herself, so we kind of balance out really well that way.
Dustin, I'm glad for your voice, and thanks for calling. Hannah, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe that's it right there. Maybe you're going to have men say, fine, you know, that was no bowl of cherries. You know, good luck, ladies, and, it's yours.
That would be great for everyone. Thirty years ago, what this caller just said would have been, you know, anathema, unacceptable. Nobody would admit to such a thing. I'm a guy. I really want to stay home and take care of my kids. Now, men say it all the time. And in statistics, in fact, men tend to lie about how much they're home with their kids because they realize they portray themselves as more responsible for child care than they actually do or are. And that's because it's socially acceptable and, in fact, welcomed and encouraged these days. And so why not?
So if it's the end of men, I don't know, is it a better world that you're describing, Hannah, or just different? I mean, is this this story over? Maybe there's still a pushback. Is there a revolt of the men in the wings?
It's just different. There's not just a revolt of the men in the wings, but I think, you know, as women become more dominant, they also change. I mean, there's been a rise in women's violence as well, and sort of how women behave and measures of aggressiveness, which Tom and I discussed a little bit, have actually been changing to show that they're not an innate quality, but on psychological studies, women are measuring more aggressive in the ways that men used to. So I think power does something to you, which is a universal truth we're all pretty aware of.
Thomas said, so we've just got half a minute here. Where do you think this ends? Does it end changing our politics?
I think it is changing our politics, and I think you see the two parties, for reasons that are very complex, but splitting on a male-female divide. In terms of male-female dominant attitudes, with the Republican Party becoming much more male, stereotypically oriented, and the Democratic Party already quite female-oriented. So it does work. I think that's a much longer discussion than this.
Well, listeners, stay tuned. The gender story goes on in many dimensions. Hannah Rosen, you really got our attention with this. We appreciate your reporting and your time with us today. The article is The End of Men, How Women Are Taking Control of Everything in the Atlantic. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Thomas Edsel, author of Building Red America. It's always great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us today, Tom.
It's good to be with you again.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.